Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We got 25 more minutes of this program. It's live. We thank you for listening each and every day to this program and to American Family Radio. By the way, if you're a fan of Bishop E.W. Jackson's show, which, you know, he had to step aside because he is running for the Republican nomination for president. So you can't be on the air and run for president. It's against the FCC rules. And Bishop Jackson knew that. That's why he called to tell me, hey, I'm stepping aside. So we didn't kick Bishop Jackson off, folks. He left because he wanted to do this for at least a season in his life. So we wish him the best. God bless the brother. He's a wonderful Christian man. But that left us with a void for a show host for that time slot. And that's a very listened to time slot. You're talking noon to 1 o'clock Central Time each day here on American Family Radio. Fred, you've been filling in.
Yes.
And we appreciate it, brother.
Yep.
You've been filling in Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sandy Rios has been filling in for in that time slot for Tuesday and Thursday. We do have a permanent host, which I think everybody's going to be very happy about. He came highly recommended to us from, I think he is the pronoun he uses. But anyway, he came highly recommended to us from Sandy Rios and from Frank Turek. So he's going to be a good one, and you're going to grow to love and appreciate his program. But I can't tell you his name right now. I'll be telling you in a few days, okay? We got a couple things to iron out on his, on our agreement. But it's all but verbally been agreed to. All right, so that's coming up. Steve Paisley, Jordahl in studio now. Good morning, Steve. How are you, brother?
I can confirm it is not me.
Yes, you're gonna stay here.
I'm on this day of our Lord
25th
of July. I am making it known that I will not be the next host of the Bishop Jackson Show.
Well,
just I'll put it out there.
I think you're doing your part to, I would call it, keep Paisley alive.
That's right. It's a full time job.
So that's you got to do that. You're right. A fashion trendsetter. For the 70s. And so anyway, all right. So I was going to tell you, Ray, did I say hello to you again? Ray Pritchard.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
So Ray's in Kansas City, and we're in Tupelo. And wherever you're listening to AFR, we thank you for joining us. So I was mentioning before the break, we're talking about radio experiences, working in radio and listening to radio. You're a baby boomer too, Steve. So we're talking about Fred worked in radio.
I worked in radio for a bit too.
You did. What'd you do?
I'm doing it now, but
But I'm talking about back in the day.
My first radio gig. It wasn't paid, but it was a college station. My college station at Biola, and I spun records. And I went fairly quickly into news and talk. So my next job was KNZS in Monterey, and I was the overnight board op. My job was getting everybody ready in the morning, making the coffee, recording. First of all, we had to record all the shows that were going to air later. They air, like, a show will air on the network at midnight, but it doesn't air until 3 o'clock in the morning because of the schedule. You got to tape it, and you got to start playing it. So I was responsible for all that, getting everything ready for the news team in the morning. But yeah, that was my first radio job. And then I went to KSCO in Santa Cruz. And I was a board op there. Also had a talk show there. It's called Keeping the Faith. It was myself, an evangelical. I was a seminary graduate pastor at the time. And a rabbi, very liberal rabbi. And we would duke it out on biblical and spiritual issues. This is a secular station. It was a fascinating show.
When was this?
It would have been 92, 93, somewhere.
Is that, and then you went to Focus on the Family?
No. Well, I had a couple, about five more years of music pastorship at churches, and then I went to Focus.
To do Family News and Focus.
Family News and Focus, yep.
That's where I first heard your voice, Family News and Focus. You did that for what? How many years?
10.
Wow. 10 years. And it was kind of the heyday. I sound disrespectful. I don't mean to be, but that was the it was the prime years for Focus on the Family.
It started at the prime years of Focus on the Family.
And the Focus on the Family boom, growth.
Yeah, but it didn't end there. I left Focus in 2000 and... Oh, man.
So you're having a baby 11, boomer moment.
Yeah, 2012. Anyway, right? Doc left Focus in about 2008, and I was there for about four more years.
Yeah. The funny thing was you went completely blank and silent, and you were staring off into space. And you know what I was doing? I was starting to stare off into space, too, while I was waiting on it.
I was doing math. I was doing your math. What year was that now? When did I go?
Well, what I'm saying is that the Focus on the Family ministry exploded in the 80s, 90s, under the direction of Dr. James Dobson.
Yep. It was going – when I got there, it was –
That's what I'm saying. Time. I mean, they had a huge campus built in Colorado Springs.
Yep.
Now, when my dad, Don Wildman, who founded this ministry, he first started appearing on the Focus on the Family program with Dr. James Dobson.
Yes.
Back in the let's see, 80s. Mm-hmm. And that's when Dr. Dobson was in Arcadia.
Yep.
California, which is a suburb of L.A.,
yes.
Right?
Yep.
And then I want to say Focus moved to Pasadena, maybe? Or
they might have. I joined them, obviously, in Colorado Springs, but they might have moved offices, but it wasn't for very long because Colorado Springs opened up. And let me tell you that Focus was the first of many different ministries that ended up in Colorado Springs. They gave
the Navigators.
Culinary. Oh my gosh, such a beautiful, beautiful camp.
I've been there. Ground. I've been there culinary. Several times.
Oh man, yeah, a lot of ministries. The HSLDA, just a lot of them, and they gave some, I guess, some preferable tax breaks to nonprofits to come out.
Yeah, but Dr. Dobson started in Southern California.
He did. He was a graduate of USC.
Yes.
Medical school.
Yes. And then I think Colorado Springs recruited Focus on the Family.
I think they did.
Gave them a lot of tax breaks and all kind of things. And
do you know Focus? You mentioned how big it was, how successful it was. It has its own zip code. It had its own zip code.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it is, but that eight something, that zip code was all Focus. If you just put Dr. Dobson and the zip code, it would have gotten to him.
Yeah, you know what always impressed me about Dr. Dobson? And I met him many times. He was a good friend of my dad's, personal friend of my dad's. But just always such a humble fella and a very nice man. You know, sometimes you hear people, well, when you're the president of a $100 million ministry annually.
Uh-huh.
And you grow like that, you know, sometimes those folks, I mean, they become, you know, arrogant or distant or rude or condescending. You know what I'm saying? They're not who they seem to be on the radio or on the TV. But he was always very, very nice man.
You're 100% right about him and double for Shirley, his wife. Wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wonderful woman. So years and years, the head of the Day of Prayer task force.
I remember I had a board meeting for Alliance Defense Fund. Ray, you still with us?
I'm listening to the whole
thing. I didn't know if you were bored yet.
No.
I had a board meeting out there for Alliance Defending Freedom.
Yeah.
Formerly was Alliance Defense Fund, which was one of the first legal Christian defense funds back in the 90s, I guess it was. And we had a meeting at the Focus on the Family campus because one of their VPs, Tom Mennery,
was on
the board as well. So we were co-board members. Tom passed away a few months ago, sadly, from in an accident. He slipped on the ice
in
New Mexico and busted his head, and he died, sadly. But anyway, we were out there, and Tom said, hey, Dr. Dobson wants to see you, you know, in his office. And so I'm like, why?
What did I do?
You know, I hadn't thrown a gum wrapper down on campus or anything. But what it was he just wanted to say hello and meet me and greet me. And so we talked for about 15 minutes. You know, Dr. Dobson at that time was a huge celebrity. I mean, he's very well. So anyway, it was just fine. I left there thinking, I think he called me in to size me up, you know, to see if I was going to be, I would be able to cut it when Don, my dad, retired. So anyway, very nice guy. And every time I've always met him, so kind and gentle.
Very positive.
But very firm. And was, you know, if you look at the leaders in the conservative Christian movement from the 80s through the 2000s, you're going to put Dr. Dobson, he's going to be on the Mount Rushmore.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Of Christian conservative leaders, for sure. And his influence was enormous, with his radio program, both from people trying to raise families and children, because that was his expertise, and also engaging, in the culture.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing about that, I won't take long with this, but,
if we all keep taking not long, we're going to be out of time, which is fine with me. I don't care. Go ahead.
I'll just say that what got the press, what everybody talked about was public policy, the Citizen Link, the thing I did, the news and the politics and who's he's consulting with presidents. But you know what the heartbeat of Focus on the Family Ministry was? It was downstairs from where I was, and there was a room. It was a big, huge room with about 30 people in it. Each one had a desk. Each one had two computer screens. And on one screen would pop up a letter that someone wrote. Dear Dr. Dobson, I'm having such trouble raising my son. I don't know what to do. And on the second screen would come up excerpts from Dr. Dobson's book, and they would send out help and books and stuff free of charge to these people that would write in. And that was what drove that was the heart of the ministry. As much as the press talked about the politics, what that ministry was about helping families. Mm-hmm. And they do that probably still so well.
Ray, thoughts on this?
As I'm sitting here listening, there's another whole world that if you're under 40, you have no recollection of what I'm about to say. The pre-internet world, the pre-cell phone world, the pre-Christian radio world, before K-Love and before AFR, all of that. I graduated from Dallas Seminary in 1978, went out to a really small neighborhood church in one of those hundreds of LA suburbs, in a little tiny church of 40 or 50 people. And my second or third year there, still just a tiny group of people, Dr. Dobson, we would get in the mail from Focus on the Family an offer for whatever that first series of talks he had done.
Dare to Discipline, I believe it was.
I guess that was what it was, you know, and it would come to you. And what I remember is, I think in those days, it came in 16 millimeter, and we would set up the projector. You'd have to thread the film through the projector. Young people have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, they don't. They really don't.
No idea, right? You have to pull the screen down. You got to get the tripod set up. You got to get the lights down. You got to get it threaded through, which was quite a difficult thing to do, and pray that the bulb wouldn't blow out on you. Then you'd hit the button, and there up on the screen for my little congregation in Downey, California, there was the great Dr. James Dobson explaining to us how we could raise Christian kids in this crazy world. I thank God for him, because there was no Christian radio as we know it today. Certainly no internet, no social media. He was a lifesaver for a whole generation of Christian families and for pastors like me who had no other way to teach our congregation.
You know, you guys, absolutely everything. I agree with everything you just said, Ray. But the difference between, I don't know what year you would cut it off. It's probably that the technological shift that took place 20 years ago, would you say?
When we went to digital?
I'm just talking about the invention of the internet.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And the spread of it, the cell phones.
Early 90s was when the internet started coming about.
When it was?
But we didn't have social media as we know it, or apps.
That was even later than that.
The apps that's coming many years later, right?
But I mean, somebody needs to write a book on this. Maybe they have, but you guys have used the expression. You said in radio, you used to spin records.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's what both you guys said.
Literally.
Well, you talk to a millennial, even probably now they probably maybe have heard of it. Their parents mentioned it, but certainly whatever the generation is under millennials. That would be like completely alien.
You know it's coming back. Vinyl records.
I've seen that.
Big,
yeah,
big business. Old record players.
But old record players spinning records. So the people. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Here's online now. There's a big market for that.
Here's another thing that Fred will know about, and maybe you guys will too. But if I say razor blades and China markers, what am I talking about, Fred?
You're talking about how to edit analog tape.
That's right.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
We used to put a news story together. No digital.
Right.
You put it on analog tape, and you did your interviews, and so you want to cut out the little 30-second piece of that interview. You had a block, and you had a razor blade, and you had tape that you put it together.
Yep.
Okay, so I was in the newspaper business.
Yeah.
Yes.
So to speak, when I went to college in Mississippi State, I was a sports editor there for the campus newspaper, and I also worked part-time for another newspaper, a daily newspaper in Columbus, Mississippi, not too far away, and then I wrote some other – I was a stringer, mm-hmm. what they called it. There's another one.
Stringer.
Yeah. I was a stringer, which meant, I didn't work full-time, but they paid me to do stories. So, mm-hmm. But the interesting thing, Ray, was, and you guys are mentioning, we did cut and paste.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the old expression cut and paste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some people use that for the internet now. Yeah. You know, you go to the internet and they say, well, cut and paste it and send it to me. Yeah. And you can do that on the internet. Well, that original form was how we used to lay out newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And you lay out a newspaper, a big sheet of paper, just the same size as your newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And all the stories would be up there in cut and paste. Print.
That's right.
And then you would go to the rollers is what I call them.
Mm-hmm.
And it would we've all seen that video footage, right? A roller in the newspapers. Mm-hmm. And maybe they still do that. I'm sure they, but they don't do the cut and paste.
No,
everything's digital now. Everything's on the computer. And it was converting to that in the late 80s or 90s. But I remember I would go cover a sporting event. And I would have to send back my story, and I would put it down on I had to find a phone. There was no cell phones. This is talking about the 80s here.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to find a phone
mm-hmm.
to put down on the computer, and it would send it over the telephone. But, I mean, talking about your – what am I trying to say?
Did you have alligator clips? Because we used to have to use that.
What is that?
To send audio. Quick story here. I had to cover, when I was a reporter in New Brunswick, I had to cover the last time a certain train was going to move between Nova Scotia and Montreal. So I got to board that train, and I was doing reports as that train made its way from Nova Scotia to Montreal. And I'd have to get off at different stops. The conductor of the train would give me about 5 minutes. And I have to run into the station, and you had to unscrew the payphone, and you put the alligator clips on from your Sony tape recorder and send it that way.
Wow.
And you play it through, and you hope you had enough quarters in your pocket on the payphone, number one. Screw that thing back on the receiver of the phone and get back on that train because it was ready to leave.
Did you have to do the reports in French when you went through Quebec?
No, I didn't. This is stuff when I talk to young people getting into the business today, and they know nothing but digital editing, and I say, you have it so good today.
Right.
So good.
So the I'm trying to think. What do you call the old just regular telephones, Ray? And do you call those things?
Rotary?
Rotary? Yeah, the rotary. So you'd have to put the rotary receiver.
Yes.
Down into two different cups.
Yeah.
Right.
In this little computer that you, it was a computer you took, a transmitter you towed it. Carried around like a suitcase. To the ball games, you know, because you write your story, and then you'd send it over the telephone.
Yeah.
So that was the way that we, now even before that, people used to have to go, reporters would have to go take notes on a pad, and then go back to the newspaper office and write your stories from memory.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
About things that happened. Uh-huh. So, anyway, the good old days before the internet and cell phones and everything.
Yeah,
back in the last century.
Well, we always enjoy. I think most people do enjoy and benefit from the modern conveniences of whatever it may be, the latest and the best.
Absolutely,
but it is. You know, to look back and say, well, this is how we used to do it, you know, before.
Can you imagine being a war correspondent, what you had to do to put that story back into the newsrooms?
No.
Can't. My.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know any war correspondents?
No. But being in the midst of the battle, you had to report on that and then get somewhere where you could get your story back.
Yeah. I just remember growing up, and you three guys do too, and many of our listeners do. Like I said, I was born in 63, so I just remember the evening news with whoever it was, Walter Cronkite or David Brinkley or whoever it was. My dad watched Walter Cronkite mostly, I think. But I remember as a 5, 6, 7-year-old child, I remember vividly the evening news would have video footage of the Vietnam War.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was Dan Rather in the field, usually. I mean, and CBS was.
Yeah, CBS.
Dan
so
Rather
Dan Rather, he was the, what do you call it? He followed Walter Cronkite, right?
Yes, CBS. But during Walter Cronkite's time, I believe he was the war correspondent in Vietnam.
I got you.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came and went on CBS, and I don't know who followed him.
It got complicated after that.
Connie Chung.
Yeah, for a bit.
Oh, she was the one?
Connie Chung came along.
Well, I remember her. Yeah.
Well, all right, here's a trivia question for you, Ray. Who followed David Brinkley? Was it David? Who was NBC? Was it
Huntley Brinkley, right? Chet Huntley and David Brinkley on NBC News. Who followed?
Well, it's Brokaw. Did Brokaw
Tom Brokaw.
Came along.
But wasn't there a guy between them or?
It seems like there was.
With glasses, he wore glasses.
Are you talking about Harry Reid?
Chancellor, John Chancellor.
John Chancellor.
Own Chancellor.
Wasn't he NBC?
Yes, he was NBC.
Wasn't he?
I say that confidently.
But wasn't he between David Brinkley and
right.
Tom Brokaw?
I think that's right. But Tom Brokaw did not follow Huntley Brinkley directly.
I'll tell you, one of the best books I ever read in my life was written by Tom Brokaw.
Yes. Generation.
The Greatest Generation.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's absolutely worth your time. It's 20 years old or so, but it's a fabulous book. It's called The Greatest Generation by Tom Brokaw. All right, Ray, thank you for a trip down memory lane there.
You bet. Thanks, Tim.
Steve, we didn't get to one of your news stories.
That's okay. There'll be news tomorrow.
That's what happens when four old men sit around.
<All right>.
That's exactly right.
Reminiscing.
Thank you, Fred.
You bet.
Thanks to Brent Creeley, our producer. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.